Good evening, everyone. Scripture, I'd like to call the April 27, 2015 board meeting will now come to order. Please rise and face the flag for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Elter?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr. Bocinski?
Here.
Mr. Chandler?
Here. The board has determined it has a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of a specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session?
Motion.
Second. Roll call.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Elter?
Yes.
Mr. Bocinski?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Kendler?
Yes. We will be leaving into another room and coming back out shortly, I hope. So we are back in open session. Do I need a roll call for that, or we're good to go? All right. We're in open session. So public participation. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form, and limit your comments to 3 minutes or less. If your comments have substantially been reflected in others, we would ask, in the interest of time, that you please forego making them and that you provide the board with any copies of written material that you may have. Personal complaints and criticisms about staff members, students, or other members of District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Also, profanity, interruption, and or other interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate District 41 staff representative for a response if a response is warranted. Is there anyone present that would like to address the board at this time?
Jeff Cooper.
Mr. Cooper.
Thank you. I ask that several items on tonight's consent agenda be taken off and put into discussion in front of the public before returning to the consent agenda. That would be item 1A1, 1A3, and 1B. Concerning 1A3...
I'm sorry, Mr. Cooper. 1A1?
Yes, that would be...
And then 1A3, is that what you said?
Recommendation, superintendent's compensation, and resolution authorizing dismissal of educational support.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Concerning 1A3, superintendent's compensation, we have the right to know why this is not a consent agenda. Are we extending the superintendent's contract? Are we dealing with a license issue or lack of one? If that is the case, it is always better to be straight and honest with your stakeholders than to scurry around at 7 a.m. on a Saturday like you're trying to cover up something. When you act in such a manner, you shouldn't be surprised that there are trust issues that stakeholders have with this. So I'm looking for, after I finish, an answer to my request on pulling these items. I would leave my other points to later on this evening, but in the interest of apparently greater transparency, you killed the second public participation session. I brought up at the last meeting a request to stop paying for the total TRS benefits in District 41 administration contracts. Back of the envelope map says the savings will top $150,000 a year. You couldn't be bothered to respond at the last meeting. Anyone. When I sent an email to the 5 board members going forward and 2 new members, I found the response just as disappointing. 2 members, Mr. Bocinski and Mr. Escalante, couldn't be bothered to respond at all. Since this isn't the first time this has happened, it's about time that this behavior gets called out. No one forced you to join the board, but being on it means that you represent the public. That is your most important function. And Mr. Bocinski, that answer you gave me about your possible attendance at the FGM party at Triple I Conference in Chicago last November, you know, when you told me that you weren't answering because you were there as a private citizen, that answer was and is unacceptable. You were there only because you were a school board member. I, as a citizen, asked you a question about your attendance at this, and I was due an answer. If you want to be a private citizen, you can stop representing me, which sounds like you've already done, and you can step down and let someone else, if there's other people in this audience, that would be glad to represent the whole public. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Bruce Curry.
Mr. Curry?
I'm a teacher myself, a third grade teacher, and we worked very hard to get our credentials all done. And I noticed that Dr. Gordon is deficient, and his license for superintendentship expires on June 30th, 2015. And I just want to know what the actions the board is going to take to make sure the district has an accredited superintendent. By June 30th. I don't know if this has been discussed or could be discussed, or I don't know if it's in the consent agenda or not, but I think it's an important thing for the people in the district to know what the status of this situation is. Any information about Dr. Gordon's license would be appreciated by the public. Thank you.
I have a license.
It says it expired June 30th, 2000.
So the board is aware of the licensing, and the license is through the end of June, and that there's a process that you have to go through when you go from one state to another, and Dr. Gordon's going through that process. So unless you want to add anything to it, he's going through the process, and we don't expect that there'll be any problems.
Okay.
Thank you.
Jennifer Rath.
Ms. Rath.
Hi, I was just looking at the consent agenda and the packet, and I was also interested in wanting to read because there's nothing attached to the agenda to the packet about the superintendent compensation. And as I understand it, a consent agenda is just for routine things, like, you know, the annual ripping or whatever. I get that. But to me, when it says superintendent compensation and there's nothing attached to it, as a taxpayer, I want to kind of know what's going on with the contract that's being used or if something else is going on. And I would ask you to take that off and have some public discussion with that.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Stephanie Clark.
Ms. Clark.
Hi. I want to just read a letter that elected board member Mr. Bunkle and myself sent to Dr. Gordon and Mr. Kendall last week. We spent time touring all the elementary schools last week, and so we had some thoughts about the LMC renovation that's proposed at Lincoln for the summer. I'll just go ahead and read the letter. We're writing you about the Lincoln LMC renovation and urging the district to reconsider moving forward with its $235,000 expense. We toured Lincoln Elementary and the LMC on Monday. We believe that this construction should be held off for at least another year for the following reasons. The Lincoln LMC, although not updated with the latest in 21st century furniture, is by no means in disrepair and is as functional as any of the other LMCs in the district. It appears the renovation is not an immediate need, and there wouldn't be any detriment to waiting a year for the renovation. Number two, what action will the facility task force recommend? What if it is additioned? Currently, we don't have an answer to how fully kindergarten, and we're not sure what recommendation the facilities task force is going to give us. In reality, putting additions onto the schools if necessary is going to be the most cost-effective option and one that the committee should bring forward. Isn't there a possibility that the LMC space could be reconfigured at Lincoln to maximize space and construction if additions are recommended? Maybe it would make sense to relocate the LMC and put classrooms in that space. We're not saying that this should be done, but to spend $235,000 renovating the space now eliminates potential options for future construction. In the end, to put money into a learning center that isn't an immediate need when we haven't outlined a long-term plan for full-day kindergarten in space is for long-term planning. It is going to limit future spatial utilization. Also, we have concerns with the design of the renovation. It was stated at the last viewing meeting that the Lincoln LMC is not in an ideal location due to traffic and noise. Why would you create a presentation area whose walls do not go up to the ceiling? Isn't noise going to travel all the way through the LMC, disrupting the classrooms that surround it? And also why every classroom has a smart board. Do we need a presentation area to begin with? Maybe the LMC space doesn't need to be as big as it currently is. As far as the $30,000 of this $235,000 that's earmarked for Cubbies, given where we are at, we do see that there's a need for the Cubbies. There's no reason that this couldn't be done without the rest of the construction. We would like to note that prior to think tank, the students had their own Cubby spaces and classrooms by design. Once we moved to teacher specialization, this space could no longer be utilized for the purpose of Cubby student movement. So an initiative that wasn't supposed to cost any money is now costing another $30,000. In summary, when future construction could be needed at Lincoln to move forward with this $205,000 renovation, less the Cubby, that is not an immediate need, is poor planning. We have talked to many Lincoln parents, and they're thinking that an update would be nice to have, but it's not something we should be pursuing with such an uncertain plan for possible future construction. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Kurt Buchholz.
Mr. Buchholz.
I would just echo those same sentiments. I signed my name for that email. We did tour the schools, and we did feel after we were done touring the elementary schools in Kent Bay for taking us around on short notice that Lincoln didn't appear to be any worse or any better than any of the other schools. In fact, we felt Churchill, ironically, their carpet was probably much worse than Lincoln's, and would advise maybe the person carpeting in Churchill ahead of anything else to do. We just want to make sure that we don't pigeonhole ourselves into a situation where we could be possibly going back into these buildings again. And given what was stated that, you may be looking at those spaces and the utilization of them, we just don't feel like it's money well spent at this point. Hold it off for a year and see where we're at. Ironically, I'd like to add, we sent that email. I did receive one phone call from Mr. Kendrick, but did not receive a response from anybody else on board.
Kristen Massey.
Ms. Massey.
Good evening. Kristen Massey, Crane Room, District 41 parent, a PTA member, and a PTA leader in the community. As at the last board meeting, a suggestion was made during public participation that this board add a policy regarding PTA leaders that should decide to run for the District 41 Board of Education. I would like to comment regarding the suggestion. I find the suggestion absurd, prejudicial, and lacking merit. For over 100 years, PTAs have worked together with the schools for bettering the lives of every child in education, health, and safety. It is commonplace in many communities for PTA leaders to also be Board of Education members. Asking for current leaders to step down from their positions would leave gaps to fill mid-year, which, as this board is aware, is not always done quickly or easily done. So why would the District 41 board want to create a policy that would only serve to penalize the PTA, its members, and ultimately the District 41 children? And why should the board create a policy only about the PTA? Why not the Rotary or the Cub Scouts or a local church? What is the justification to create a policy only for the PTA leaders? PTAs are not our private nonprofit associations formed under the laws governing 501c3 public charities and under the Internal Revenue Code. To be a nonprofit, we must meet certain criteria. A PTA's tax-exempt status is one of its most important assets. If that status is revoked, charges of negligence or mismanagement may be brought against the officers and directors. Strict compliance with all applicable federal, state, and local laws is extremely important to prevent even the most well-intentioned effort from becoming a serious problem for a PTA. Lastly, like many organizations, the PTA is governed by its own set of bylaws. The local Glen Ellyn PTA units, along with council, Illinois PTA, and every individual PTA unit in the state and in the country is required to state the same language. One of the required statements is that the PTA unit is nonpartisan, and therefore PTAs are prohibited from supporting in any way any candidate for public office. Along with abiding by the bylaws of our organization, my personal integrity would never permit me to pressure voters. I know I speak for myself, Lori Taylor, and Erica Nelson, all PTA leaders, that at no time during our campaigning did any of the three of us ever pressure or influence voters by using our PTA positions. Thank you for your time and your consideration.
And now
I'm going to Lincoln for international night.
Thank you. Adios. All right, thank you. Anyone else? No? Okay, great. Thank you, everyone, for your comments. Presentation reports, updates, and initiatives. Construction update. Jack.
Jack Hayes.
Good evening, everybody. Finally, some good news to report. The weather's cooperated. We've had a chance to review the update that I sent along, but it's been a very productive month. I don't know if you've been by both Forest Lawn and Churchill, but you should see masonry, base brick masonry up. All the steel is up and masonry is up at Churchill. Roughing continues, so things are going much better the last 30 days. We made up a little bit of time, but the end dates are still as indicated, which is Forest Glen basically by the end of June, beginning of July, and Churchill by the middle of August. And so that's where we're at. And we provided a schedule. John is here. He did an updated schedule for the next phase of Churchill, which projects out starting basically in mid-August, John, and goes through next spring. Yes. So if there's any questions about the overall schedule of the next phase, we'd be happy to talk about that too.
I'll go there. That's where I have my comments. I'm just wondering. Well, that's a...
That was my setup.
It's perfect.
I have that same thing, circle.
Ideally, we like those turned over like you did for Lincoln and Ben Franklin. And I understand if you're starting in August.
Right.
We're already moving back 2 months.
Yep.
So what can we do, if anything, to expedite the start date? Is it the plans? Where are we? Is it the construction? Is it the plans? Where are we at?
The cycle, everything is stacked right up against the available cycle. I'm not sure that, let me say it this way. I'm sure right now that I couldn't sit here based on what's available from board meeting, drawings, bidding, for it to be possible for us to guarantee that we could turn the building over to and turn it over at the break. We are out to bid as of Monday. The documents were finished in record time. We've had them for a week and a half to do our review. Fred will have our chief estimator, fill out the construction documents out on the street on Monday. We're going through a shortened bid cycle. We're going to take bids on the 21st.
Shortened. We would ideally want appropriate for a public bidding.
So we'll have two or just a little over 2 weeks for bidding.
Right.
That'll give us the appropriate amount of time to get bids, to get them back, to vet those contractors, to get them to a first recommendation for you, the first board meeting in June, with hopefully the second board cycle is your second meeting in June. Let contracts and get started. From that point of view, from the actual doing the work point of view, school's out the 5th. Teachers will be in the portables until, I believe, the 8th or 9th. They're committed to be
a little bit further, but yeah.
I'm sorry, the 11th maybe, to be out of the portables.
Right.
Once the portables are down, they're going to be demolished, and then, you know, the portables will be demolished, you know, sometime around the 1st of July. I would anticipate they'd be ready to go. And that's dovetailing right in with about when we'll be able to get contracts, get submittals done, chaperones done, and get things started. I mean, so if we were to, in a best case scenario, you know, shift things up a couple of weeks, maybe we could start the middle of July, but it's nowhere near the amount of time I would need in order to guarantee you that I was going to finish it in a year.
Okay. And there's no long lead items you're seeing out there with steel or any other thing?
The building is very much the same condition that she's done 3 times previously. So we're going to have a lead time with steel. The brick's been selected. It's the same brick that's on the other building. The brick is on the ground. I believe FTM has already notified the supplier. The brick's the same brick we're going to use. Really, steel, rooftop units, which are really a commodity for those size units, and everything else is pretty much good. So there's nothing, you know, knock on wood, that I see out there that is a long lead time item we need to be planning for.
Okay.
Joe, we just received an initial feedback from the village today, I believe, on the ARC, the Design Review Board review. So we're going to respond to that later this week. And hopefully we'll see them on the docket maybe next month.
Mid-May.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Thanks.
Anyone else?
Just real quickly, in the second paragraph under update on page 2, you talked about the project completion date of August 19th from in Constance. So that's what we're talking about, is that piece getting done.
Right.
And then...
That's the first
one. Yeah. So any re-sequencing we're trying to do to make sure that we're done by that 19th with those pieces.
Yes, all of those, all the necessary modifications or coordination or adjustments that needed to be done to accommodate getting those initial classrooms open in that time has been coordinated, and we're working towards that. Yeah.
So now it's this balance of this additional piece we're putting out, but the primary focus is
the existing addition, because the portables are going away to accommodate the second one, so they have to be up and running. Yeah.
Because we had to make provisions in that transition, the temporary access through that construction.
Right. That's how the last time you brought that up, and I was thinking about that, and I feel a little bit like this idea. Good. Yeah, thank you.
So I got a quick question. Yes. You know, sometimes luck tends to run out, right? So what happens, we spend all of our time with the scheduling, we've gone over our excess days. What's plan B if storm waters and hail and storm bring things through and destroy
our delays, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Are you telling us, like, okay, by August 1st, you're going to come to the board and say, yeah, we're not going to hit that date. You need a plan B.
No.
Will that be because you'll tell us in July, or?
No, I mean, really, there's very little risk associated with the completion of the Churchill project at this point in time.
The current project under construction.
Correct. For the August 19th.
Under construction.
Okay.
The advantage that we all collectively received was by getting that project started earlier was to get ahead of the schedule and be able to pick up the ability to deliver that in August rather than in the fall. So we believe that the risk of not completing by mid-August is very low at this point in time. You know, we still have a couple more months before those portables are going to be gone. So if something were to happen, you know, we still would have the ability, potentially, if we see something between now and the middle of June, to say, hey, let's not demolish those portables. Right. We can stay there. So I appreciate your question. I think it's insightful in terms of anticipating, you know, a plan B type of scenario. But there's very little risk at this point. We've got the building on the wall. The roof is...
So part of the original program was to make sure that we could do the roof at any point.
Right.
So the roof's actually going to start going on this weekend.
Yeah.
Because it's been a part of the plan all along to make sure that didn't get affected by, or just we limited the effect of that on weather and time on that. So once the building envelope's in place, the components largely are available, if not on site.
Okay. I'm not Joe.
Yeah.
A building envelope is a what?
Stop. Hard concept.
What keeps you dry?
Okay.
Everything
goes inside, right?
Yeah. Everything keeps you dry, makes the rest of the project go smooth. And we're starting the roof this weekend. The walls are up. Windows are already approved. They're waiting to go in. So
okay.
We feel very confident.
So there's an enclosed space, but
yes.
In the main, where we have to
use it. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Are
we going to have any odor issues with starting the roof this weekend?
So that's the primary reason we're doing the work over the weekend. So we'll load the roof material-wise on Friday, noise and construction noise, and then the odor issues will be confined to the weekend.
Okay. Okay, anybody else? Odor, envelopes, anything? All right, thank you.
Exactly.
Discussion items, there are no discussion items on tonight's agenda, so we move forward to action items, consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like to move from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes human resources, personnel report, employee recommendations, resignation and retirement, superintendent's compensation, resolution authorizing the dismissal of educational support staff, finance, facilities, and operations, treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue expenditure, summary report, summary of bills and payroll, vandalism report, disposal of surplus property, 2014-2015 FOIA report, school district payment order, April 8, 2015 through April 21st, 2015, and other matters, approval of board meeting minutes, April 13, 2015, regular meeting, April 13, 2015, regular meeting, closed session. Motion?
Move.
May I have a second? Roll call.
Mr. Melton?
Yes.
Mr. Rozinski?
Yes.
Mr. Elsner?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
No.
Mr. Kendall?
No. Okay, superintendent recommendations. At the April 13, 2015 meeting of the Board of Education, the following recommendations were discussed and are presented for action this evening. 2014-15 final school calendar. May I have a motion to approve and adopt the 2014-15 final school calendar as presented?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? Roll call.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Bocianici?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Kendler?
Yes. Board policy revisions. May I have a motion to approve and adopt the recommended board policy revisions as presented?
Motion.
Second. Discussion?
I just want to point out the addition that was made. I know we talked a little bit about, Diane and I did a little bit, about the addition of having a stakeholder eighth grade student, mm-hmm. and there was some change to the language, and I have to apologize, my printer printed this out in yellow.
Is this 718?
Thank you. So I just want to read this out loud so that it's on record. Number item 9, the district's bullying intervention and response plan must be based on the engagement of a range of school stakeholders, including, and this is the new language, adapted language, no more than 2 students with at least 1 at the eighth grade level identified by school administration and parents, guardians. And I appreciate the addition of that with some flexibility, so thank you for doing that.
I do too, with the policy committee, to Paul. Thank you. I brought that up last time. I think it was much more flexibility.
That's a good addition.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
Any questions?
Roll call.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Bocianici?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Ellis? Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr.
Kendler? Yes. Okay, 2015 Summer Capital Project, Abraham Lincoln Library Media Center renovation. May I have a motion to approve the Abraham Lincoln Library Media Center renovation recommendation as presented?
Motion. Second.
Discussion.
Well, I want to reflect the comments that Stephanie and Kurt made. We had your email forwarded to us, so it came through Dr. Morgan and John as well, so thank you for that. I guess a couple things. My initial response is giving some context to this. So Team 21, and I think Stephanie mentioned this already as well, the initial charge to that committee was to think about the potential changes, improvements, look at projects, et cetera, and not be bound, and that was the language around the dollar figure, recognizing that things are going to cost money, but to be creative, to look at research, to do the kind of the hard wiring of what's going on in terms of changes in schools and how to look at achievement gap issues. So it was a broad, you know, pretty wide agenda. The other piece of that was that when Team 21 became adopted its role as one of the Teams for Excellence TFEs, it continued that charge of being the kind of the innovator, the innovative engine, you know, of the district. So the teachers that are involved who rotate every couple of years, representative of all the schools in the district, board liaison, which happens to be me this time, co-facilitators, which is Mrs. Carlson, our assistant superintendent for teaching and accountability at Kent King, a teacher leader from Churchill, brings an agenda that the team then looks at. And this idea around the LMC was an agenda item beginning really back in 2014, the end of the fall, essentially, and then discussion around that really rubbing up in February of this year. So I went back to look at my minutes around this. And that context wasn't given in the last conversation, so I just wanted to put that in. I think I mentioned it, but I wanted to kind of lay that out. So Team 21, just to kind of focus this, really was looking at our schools and the reality of how do you utilize the space to, you know, to some extent what you guys are talking about too, in a way that keeps adopting it, iterating space so that it's used in ways that we might not be looking at it currently. So the LMC question came to pass when one of the team members asked, so, you know, what's the heart of a school? You know, when you look at a school, and what's the heart of it? Folks started to talk about Hadley. So 2 years ago when we redid the Hadley over that summertime, I remember one of the first comments I heard from a graduated eighth grader coming back with their younger sibling in sixth grade, and I was walking, having to walk down the hallway, and they turned around and they said, what? This wasn't here last year, you know, talking about Hadley. And so I approached them, we chatted a little bit about it. And what it reminded me was that students do notice things like that, and they notice the difference that it makes for them in terms of some of their education. So when Team 21 started to talk about this, it was under this framing, which is the LMC serves as the heart of public school. How do we reconfigure or look at space? So one of the changes, and this happened to be Churchill, it was, I think, 3 winters ago, correct me if I'm wrong, Bob and Dave, we had a huge bottleneck of students coming out of the Churchill Library because the registration, desk was there at the door. You from the Churchill, you walk upstairs, boom, that's where Nikki Pledge was, and where they would sign books in and out. And there was a point in time every day where there were literally, 200 students coming from the ring of rooms, which is unique to Churchill, and all going out at the same time. At the same time, having 2, 3, 4 classes of kids trying to sign stuff out. So it was at that point that some reconfiguring of that library was done. It wasn't a huge cost to the district. It was, I think, time and dollars in terms of moving that big, But Nikki was involved with that. And I called her last week, knowing we were going to talk about this again, and asked her to kind of refresh my memory around that. Nikki Clegg is left as the head of our library, LMC, over there. And for her, she said if it was important because if we're not able to kind of make adjustments and look at our space and keep iterating it, we're not going to be getting the best out of the space. And so there wasn't a significant cost to that. It was, I think, time and minor construction costs, things like that, to really use the space. We already had some couches in there that had been purchased. There were small group spaces. So I asked her, when I talked to her, and I talked to her today also, what's the space look like to you? She said it truly has become more of a heart. We have kids that come out of their classrooms, they can come right to small group space and use that. So I take this as an example that the LMC at Lincoln, and I went over there to look at it. When I went back to look at our conversations around making changes in the district, like the facility stuff, none of the conversation, again, correct me if I'm wrong, has centered around changing, wholesale changing, like the internal structures of those buildings. And for Lincoln, because it's in the center and it's that hub, the library off of that, the thought that we would then spend, what I think would be significant dollars to shift that is really antithetical to the conversation we've been having about wanting to do smart changes within the buildings, even if the modifications piece moves forward. But there's been no discussion around shifting any of the library space from any. Bob, is that accurate? I went through all of our books over the last week and a half, looked at all of it. There was never any discussion around that. So for me, and I'll close, this becomes more about being smart about our age and obsolescence and our capital dollars. Those are taxpayer dollars that are entrusted to be doing work within the school system and to do it in a way that helps to improve education and learning. And, I get the question about the demonstration center and that piece where, the walls, et cetera, are, not extended, and would like probably a little bit more information about that and from a value proposition standpoint. But to look at this, when I looked at the numbers and what, again, we would be doing when I went over there to look at the school, it does what I think the board and boards before us has done, which is to say, with the dollars entrusted and being good stewards of how we use it, does this improve the educational environment? And if we're waiting, and we've talked about this, another year or two for a decision to be made around full-day kindergarten program or modifications, that's not going to happen in a year. It's not going to happen in 2 years, potentially. And so what are we doing, rhetorical question for me, too, to improve student learning, and does it fit with the focus of the board in the long-range plan, which I think it does. And so my sense of this is that there's much more context than just showing up one day and saying, hey, let's improve the library. It is a hugely utilized space with the Glen Ellyn Children's Resource Center. So literally from morning until dinner time, that place is used. And if there's a way to improve the space to actually improve some of the access that we give to those kids, and it's a dollar figure that I think is certainly, you know, been budgeted for and well within some of our capital expenses from before, then I think it's not just in the daytime that the teachers will be able to access this and do more with the space, but it also improves our evening, you know, our late afternoon evening programs, which we know aren't going to go away, and in fact are going to increase in terms of use. So thank you for listening to me. I just wanted to give that. I do appreciate the feedback, and I would like to know more about, again, the presentation space and how that, you know, the design of that in terms of the usage piece, the value proposition of that piece. But I personally think these are dollars worth spent, and it's going to the kids, and it's now. It's not in 2 years, and it's I think, money well spent. So thank you.
Anyone else?
I have a couple questions for Bob, real quick. You had provided us some of the bid results in your packet, and this is mostly for millwork. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. And as far as lead times, and we go back to more lead times and all that, you're all good with your summer project to do this?
Yes, we are. Yeah. As long as we keep moving forward as we intend.
And just to be clear, kind of stating this, but you had, when you presented this to the finance committee, we had talked a lot about this project along with a couple others that you recommended. Mm-hmm. And if I remember correctly, you had sharpened your pencil before you came and presented to us. Because originally what you had budgeted was how much for summer projects for the fiscal year?
Well, we start typically at about $1 million annually.
And this total package that's on for approval today is roughly $485,000. Okay, so it is correct to say that you have sharpened your pencil. So I just want to make sure it's clear that everybody understands that. And it is budgeted for, as Erica said. So I think that's an important fact to make sure we're all on the same page. Kurt and Stephanie, I'm sorry I didn't respond to your email, but it was sent via somebody, so I didn't know you expected a response. Hopefully this little discussion here helps with a response. I think it's prudent. They pointed out several things I thought was prudent. Whenever you have future construction, Jack's right there. You know that you always look at your areas of future planning to make sure there's not overlap, so you're not putting money in and then ripping money out. Nobody wants to do that. So Erica hit some of the points. Thank you, Erica. That I went back, confirmed with Paul and Bob that this isn't an area we looked at to renovate if there was additions. For me, the additions, I think we talked about that at length when there was three of them that were three options that were presented to us. We limited it to two. There was a request by a community member to include it in a task force, which I think is good to look at what the community member, one member said, and you added it to the task force. For me, I still sit here and look at these additions and know that they don't give us everything we want. I know the cost may be less, but sometimes you get exactly what you pay for. So from my perspective, that's where I'm at. I'm all ears for the community task force to hear. But what's important to realize, even given that, and for me, that's pretty much a non-starter because I can see what we're going to end up with and what we're going to end up with. You don't want to pay for it. But as I said, I'm all ears. I hear what the task force has to say. Moving forward, looking at this, all the plans, Ron, you've done a lot of plans here in Lincoln. None of them have us moving the library to the right, to the left, to the north, to the south. So I feel comfortable with that, but I do think it's prudent to bring it up, so thank you for doing that. Because
can I just piggyback on one thing to ask Ron related to your construction piece that I think it's important to know around the Lincoln Library that Ron can expand, Ron and Bob can expand on, that around the mudjacking that's occurred in that Lincoln Library and why this wouldn't be a prime location for any future major construction. I'd hand it to you.
sort of dovetailing into previous discussions over the years, I mean, we really tried to stay away from that particular zone because I think it was 1963, it was Mudjack. Where the slab had settled and cracked, and so they actually went in there and they jacked it up and then grouted the area underneath the slab. So we were very careful with our with any modifications in here. You know, gypsum walls are coming back, lighter walls, the foundations, the footings. We had to trench across from some new, pour some new power, so we were very careful. We reviewed that with the structural engineer. So it's kind of, we had to have to sort of tiptoe around in that particular zone. And, you know, while we have looked at that and, you know, in the past as having minor remodeling, it's never been wholesale reconfiguration of that space like we looked at on the far west end of the building.
You said that was 1963?
Yeah, that was the report that I saw that was in the district archives. I actually used it in the Lincoln UBL to explain that to the kids. yeah, there are some fairly poor soils in there.
So, Joe, I apologize for jumping in on your piece.
No. One other point, and that's good to know. I did not know that history, but that helps explain why you wouldn't be doing much activity around that with renovations. The cubbies was one thing that was brought up. I think if you go there, you know you need cubbies. I think the point about the teacher specialization, it's right on, because when I was sitting on a parent... I forget what that was before I was on the board. There was some forum, or not forum, but some parent group, yeah, advisory group I was on. I brought this up. I know that our, you know, the previous board voted on that, but not this board. But it was said by the administration at that time, a different administration, that there wouldn't be costs associated with it. I don't think this is the only cost that I've seen associated with it. I think there have been. But there are costs to improve anyways, and these cubbies are an improvement to what's there at Lincoln, what was there before and what's there now, but I do agree with what was noted, and I think it was a fair notation to an additional cost and something we didn't necessarily expect. I did talk to Lincoln parents also. I'm a Lincoln parent myself. I didn't get any negative feedback, any objections. Doesn't mean we talk to the same people, but that's the people I talk to. I'm glad people in the community are talking to us and we're talking to people in the community and get feedback. At the end of the day, I go back to, and to me all that's important, but I go back to the learning hub that we brought up, and that library is well used and it's shown it. I mean, is it obsolete? I wouldn't say it's obsolete. It's still functional, that's for sure. But is it the best learning environment that we can give our kids? Absolutely not. It gets a lot of activity. I'm on this board with the idea that we need to improve our facilities. I think we've done that in many areas, and I think this is just one more thing we're doing to provide our kids the best learning environment that they can have given today's constraints. So I'm going to vote for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, I have two things.
I didn't.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I had just a quick question. I know that we got the email from the two new board members that raising some issues. I guess my question to you, Bob, if were we to say, okay, let's push this back to the next meeting that the new board members were seated, would that totally wipe out your timetable? At that point, there's no way that we could have done it then.
Yeah, they're talking about 8 to 12 week lead time on casework and the furniture that we're ordering to fit in this space. So that's kind of why we push this as quickly as we can so that we can make our timelines for this summer.
So if we're going to install this new library, we have to vote on it now. Otherwise, you won't get it done for the beginning of the next school year. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Let me just start off with the numbers for a sec. So I may have all this wrong, but what I thought I heard you say is we budget $1 million for capital, and we're at 485, so we get 515 left. But I thought that a part of the portables funding, the removal of the portables, sorry, I always mess that up, was $1 million out of capital spend for the following year. So are we $515,000 short for funding, or are we just taking that somewhere else? Or did I just misunderstand how we were funding them?
I don't think that was a comment.
Pardon?
I don't recall that comment.
So I thought we were funding the portables. It was $15 million, $7 million loan, $7 million reserves, and $1 million out of capital expenditure.
I think what you're referring to, John, you can correct me, but I think you're talking about the net, the Churchill four, the last four, if you will.
No.
The way we were going to fund those.
No.
With some, okay.
Are you talking about the payment, the yearly payment?
Yeah, the original one that we said. We took a loan for $7
million. Yeah.
We took $7 million
reserves. Speak about that, Bob.
And then we had $1 million that we were going to take out of our capital spend for a year so that we could fund.
It was out of operating funds, and I budgeted actually this current fiscal year.
So it was out of operating funds now?
Out of operating funds. It wasn't determined whether it was going to come out of capital projects or whatever. The direction was to provide for $1 million in funding out of this year's budget.
Okay, so we are essentially underspending our capital this year by $515,000 over our normal $1 million spent.
Yeah, at the finance committee, we had conversations around this, and because of everything else coming online this year, especially with the additions being finished at Lincoln and Franklin, all the site work still needs to occur, the additions to site work at Forest Glen and Churchill, we actually scaled back on our spending. We just really staff time dedicated.
Just a clarification, though, this year means 2015,
2006. Right. I needed to clarify that because I had said something about that at the last meeting, too. So, all right. Thank you for that. For me, and I'm making an assumption here. I'll just kind of reiterate it. But, the way I understand the process worked, at least when I was on finances, there's a list of capital improvement projects. Bob has a list, totals, whatever, $8-9 million. Finance committee looks at it, get input from the administration, prioritize what comes out, and this is something that came to the top. I would love to improve the library at Lincoln. My only concern is that given the way we did the additions, my understanding from the architects is we really can't build on to that building anymore. We do have a full-day kindergarten decision that needs to be made. And to me, there are two big spaces, if you will, that are left at Lincoln. This is one of them, and I just look at that as gold, and I just worry that if we don't end up doing something at Spalding and we have to come back to the buildings, we've seen this, we've got two kind of spaces left, and when I walked through the spaces, it seemed like a lot of the mechanicals in the other open space were a lot harder to deal with than in this space. I didn't know about the mud jacking, but it's been since 1963, so must have been good mud that they used since it's still there. So to me, it's just space that, and I just view it as it's just precious space at Lincoln, and if we don't end up moving forward with full-day kindergarten at Spalding, and we want to provide it, as we've been told, it's, some board members say it's a need, not a want, and then Dr. Gordon says it's going to happen at some time. I would just hate to do this to this space and just propose that we do some other capital project, a roof or something else, that for this year to do that. With regards to the cubbies, I think that I know there's at least one wall where you just can't add cubbies because then the hallway's not wide enough for code. But I think that we could do more around there with cubbies. I just don't think you can replace a hook for a cubby. So I guess I would have a cubbies strategy for the building as opposed to just putting the ones where they are because they could be used in other places too. So that's my rationale. In the work we're doing here at the library, we are going to move some mechanicals to put the desk in the middle. We're going to actually shrink the space a little bit because we got to move the wall in. It'll be more open, which is good from an architectural visual light perspective, but also louder from there are two classrooms on each side. I was there today. I popped back in. You know, the space, quite honestly, really wasn't being used. I'm not saying it isn't. I know the resource group uses it. The folks in the library let me know that. But certainly at that time of day, we have plenty of space where the resource kids can go. So I just think that the space is too precious. And since we've, you know, we're a little landlocked on that property, I wouldn't do this. So
can I get a clarification, John? Because I want to make sure that I understood what was asked. Okay. So what you're saying is that you have concern about doing something to that space to improve it because the district might go back and say, we're going to carve it up into classrooms.
Well, I have nothing against improving space.
No,
it's
I
just
know
spending
that, but I'm saying your concern is that we might have to use that size of space for...
My concern is it's one of two spaces that we have.
Right.
And if we end up providing full-day kindergarten, which seems like certain board members want to do and certainly is a recommendation of the administration, and we have to go back to the buildings, we will have spent $200,000 on this space and may have to spend some more money doing other things. So.
But this is my clarification. What I hear you saying is that that is not something that would make, that is, would be provided for based on the way this space is, how it's configured, or I'm not using the right terminology, but.
Well, our plans didn't envision capturing that space for additional classrooms.
Where would we put a library?
The plan was to remodel it into a library in mm-hmm. the future. That mm-hmm. you're sort of ahead of the curve there.
Mm-hmm.
It was to capture that space, and then the west pod was converted to kindergarten spaces.
Right.
And then presumed that the core space was replaced.
Right. So my question is, I mean, buildings have to have libraries. I don't envision any other space. That space is so landlocked in the floodplain too. I mean, there's really no place to add a larger space.
Well, you could put the library where that, what do you call it, the quad? Where the
television?
The side on the west is, the west side.
This one?
They're mirror pods, but again, we were trying to minimize the impact in that particular area.
Right.
Because, you know, with the kindergarten spaces, we'll be trenching potentially for restrooms and other things, so it's more invasive as far mm-hmm. as the retrofit.
Well, it doesn't have to be kindergarten rooms either. I mean, it's just what we have on this drawing, but they don't have to be kindergarten rooms. So is there anything that says you can't build classrooms on that library space? No. So, you know. And I felt the space was a little bigger than the other. Sorry, I forget what you call it, but the other space. It seemed like it was at least a little bigger.
Well, and that might be because of the computer lab. I mean, it's more carved. It's a carved so it probably feels tighter, but it's about the same.
So again, I just look at it. To me, that space is both spaces, not just the one mm-hmm. versus the other. Both spaces are good spaces, and since we don't have a decision on what we're doing with full-day kindergarten or whether to move forward. I understand your timing thing, Eric. You know, I appreciate the, we don't want to wait 10 years to do it. But, again, I walk through the library, and it's not unusable. It's not in disrepair.
I'm not saying it is. What I'm saying, what I heard Ron say and what has been in our report, and as we've talked about this, that space was never envisioned to be anything but that heart space, that library space in the building. And I don't, even with the modified plan that we're looking at in terms of where it's located, as we are moving classrooms back into the building under one roof, the thought of shifting and splitting that up and then putting those classrooms on virtually the other side, I think it flips some of what, you know, we are looking at in terms of trying to keep that those other grades, the steam rooms, et cetera, around that space where kindergartners utilize library and that type of learning space less or differently. You know, we're trying to keep that learning space and the technology and all that around the space that might be using it with level two, et cetera, over there. So,
and let me make one other point clear, too, that if just simply flipping those two spaces will be displacing the faculty lounge, the IT.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of domino effect.
There's a lot of displacement, and really, you certainly don't want to just drop the classrooms inside the current pod, because then they'll have no natural daylight, and we try to avoid that.
So it seems like there's actually more daylight in the library than in the other pod, because you've got the angled roof with the big windows.
Well, but if we converted that east pod to classrooms, if you sort of carved that up and put the library on the other side, we wouldn't want to just drop that in to the center where that library is, put four classrooms in there. They'd be awfully small to begin with, and they'd have no natural daylight.
Would it be more costly to move the library and all the surrounding classrooms and all those other things to the other side of the school and then build the library, you know, where the telemation is?
Right.
So you build the telemation over there and then you bring all those classrooms over to the library. That seems like that is a huge waste of money. To me, I mean, just as a common sense, I'm sitting here trying to think about this. I'm like, that makes little to no sense to me, but I'm not a construction guy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just look at it and saying, why would you flip things and move all that stuff back over there? That one just doesn't make sense to me.
That's correct.
Just my perspective as I sit here.
While I agree with your point, Paul, I have to go back to what I said in the last meeting is we can't and we shouldn't, since we have opened the door to allow this conversation to occur by the kindergarten committee to be able to use these spaces again, you know, I wasn't for that, but that's where we landed.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we can't, again, take options off their table.
No, the point thing, though, is to know that you have a constrained space you're working with.
I'm afraid, though, that if we say that we're going to not do this, or we're going to do this library because it's cost prohibitive to not do it, or do it in the future through the construction of kindergarten, and to some of John's points, I think we're already starting to prejudice that kindergarten facility space conversation. Now, we wouldn't have been having this conversation if we would have said building to the existing schools was off the table, which I thought we were, but I'm going to go with where we are now. So where we are now is that kindergarten committee has the ability to come back and say, to Joe's point, we want the cheap option and we're going to get the cheap facilities. And part of that conversation is moving the library to over here and the cost benefits for that. So while I readily agree to the educational value of doing it right now, mm-hmm. I think because we open the door to allow the construction of this building to be part of that kindergarten conversation.
I think the important thing, Patrick, is, and you're right, if we open the door, we open the door. You might.
I think we did open the door.
We all voted that it wouldn't be on there. I understand that. But here's the thing. At the end of the day, looking at the cards in front of you and knowing what your experts have told you about that space and everything they've always designed is that that space is the ideal place for the library space. John can disagree about MUD in 1963 and all that, but we have to rely on our experts saying this is why we're not doing work there. If you start trenching in that, things become a lot different. If you have to reinforce it, your costs go through the roof. These are things not everybody here should know because that's not everybody's expertise. Maybe I understand them, but that's okay. We have experts out here that we rely on. To me, every plan that Erica looked at in the past, she's been here longer than I have, and that I've looked at, has had this as the library space. Now I have a serious rational construction reason why I understand that. And I was always looking to move things when we initially got on the board to see if there was a better way to play the cards in front of you. But it doesn't seem to be the case. So to not move forward, to me, would just be detracting from how we can improve the learning space for these children at this school. So I agree with what you're saying, but I also want to be clear what Ron's saying and what Bob's saying, that these, we have to rely on them. And this is the reason that all these designs we've seen have not had this chase, had this space change. So the other thing is, not that it matters, but John, you stated it was 200,000. It's 150,000, right, Bob, for the construction of the space. Yeah, the other stuff you can, if you can move. I mean, it's furniture and cubbies and stuff. So the cost we're talking is 150. Still not chump change. Don't get me wrong, but just for clarification, we said 200. It's written as 150. Just for the record.
So Joe, here's what I heard. What I thought was a little different. Or at least the way I've interpreted it is, our experts said that there's nothing that stops us from using the library's classrooms. That's point one. Point two is, what we never, I don't think we ever looked at the space on the west side as a library. We do know that if the kindergarten rooms go there, you've got to take away the mechanical closets, and you've got to take away some of the other stuff that you guys talk about that I don't know about. So we do know that
nothing stops you except if you have an open checkbook, nothing stops you with construction. Jack, you have an open checkbook, nothing stops you. We don't have enough open checkbook here. And so when they take their design considerations, are looking at the most cost-efficient way. Clearly, if we want to deliver these Churchill 4 before in January 1st for the second semester, we could ask them, and it was, I wrote it down, what is the premium time going to cost us? Is it $20,000 to get those? You don't think this isn't a question I'm not going to send to Bob. Is it $20,000 to get those rooms January 1st, or is it $2 million? What is the difference? Because you need to pay for premium time. And maybe if it's small, and I'm changing subjects, but the point's being made, if you have an open checkbook, and that's how Ron answered that question, Jack, as a construction person, not putting words in your mouth.
So did you answer that question as an open checkbook that there's nothing stopping us from putting the...
Raise the question again? Just
well, the insinuation here, right, or the inference, is that we could put classrooms in the library, but we'd have to have an open checkbook mentality.
Well, like I said, we'd have to study that. I mean, we haven't studied that, and I can tell you without hesitation that we were very careful with the modifications that we put into this library.
That answered my question. Thank you.
I'm always very good about allowing us our blue sky thinking. I guess I'll put it that way. It's a business term, and we could blue sky this all over the place. But in the end, the reason I went back to look at all the plans, back to actually 2009 when we did that, and when we did that matrix, Drew, and we redid it with finance at that point, John, you were there, remember? You know, does this do it? Does it get us under one roof, et cetera, et cetera? All those pieces were in there, including looking at how you flip the building, and there were questions around that. So I appreciate that you allow us to do this. What I really need is, there's this other reality, and it's, I think for me, it's the cost. And also, and this has been hammered to this board and every other board, referendum isn't a given. It could not pass, and then we're at year two and three and four and five. And so the cost effectiveness of this within a structure that I have been believing, as we look at it, needs to retain the core space the way it's looking. Seems to me to be an advantage to get better learning space. And I hear what you're saying, Patrick. The modifications came back on the table. It adds that other wrinkle.
Yeah, my concern is the numbers we saw, whatever, 3 to 4 million to put the kindergarten classes over there, require moving a lot of stuff that's there. Up in the ceiling, the electrical cabinet, the computer room, and, my first reaction is, well, could we put a library in that space without doing all that? Maybe that'd be more cost effective. And since we haven't studied it, none of us really know.
But here's the thing. So just look at the pieces of the puzzle. You have two kindergarten rooms there already, and you have a library over here. So what you're asking is take four kids, where you have two, destroy those,
No,
right?
You're not destroying.
You're just going to put the two and two here. Or
you're not destroying them.
So what are you doing with the two kindergarten rooms in your scenario? They exist.
The ones that are there.
Correct.
There's already a space there.
So what are you using them for in the future?
I don't know. I'd ask these guys, hey, take a look at that space.
I would argue simply you want those four classrooms together. You don't want two over here and two over there.
Yeah, but you're assuming they have to be kindergarten. You could put the kindergartners where the first graders are.
That's troublesome.
There's a whole way you can.
You have to.
You know, the first graders weren't always here. They weren't there in 1963, I can assure you.
We redesigned those two classrooms for kindergarten rooms today, correct? That's what they're used as. That's what we spent money. If they're in 1963, maybe they were the teacher's lounge.
You mean the level three classroom?
No, the two kindergarten rooms are on the west at Lincoln right now.
The existing ones,
yeah.
So okay. You know that. You see four green ones on the plan in front of you?
Yeah.
Two are right now kindergarten rooms.
Yeah.
Okay. So what you're proposing is taking those two kindergarten. I don't care what they were used in 1963 because money was already spent to create those as kindergarten rooms today. That's where we're at today.
So
if we're going to flip four, you want four together. If you don't want four together, my rhetoric has no meaning. Okay? But I believe you want the four kindergarten rooms together in this scenario of a modification, which I can't, as I'm with Patrick, I can't believe we're actually talking about. But you would have to move those four all the way to the library, to the east, and then move your library all the way to the west. That's the proposal, as I understand it, that we're trying to guard against and not spend $150,000 rehabbing an area that is still functional, has probably some obsolescence because we're not really using the computer room, so there's probably some obsolescence there. But it's functional. But the question for me is, do you want to improve it for the students for the next couple of years and forever, since you're not going to impact that area based on the plan, every plan that's been submitted to us for a reconfiguration of Abraham Lincoln School?
I don't see the cost benefit in the value of kids having this
today versus tomorrow.
With the library they have now and the time that they use it.
No. Well, that's a different point. I don't think anyone can say
here's the incremental value.
But you said something really important, John, and I just want to get this out. And that is, when this has been looked at in improving the library space, it's under the context of how do we better utilize that space as the heart of the school. That's been the whole conversation, that it's more of a hub, there's more of a feel to it, students feel more, have more access to different learning environments within that space. That's the improvement intention behind it. If you look
that was
at
our
it.
Challenge.
Even with Churchill not having spent a lot of money, just shifting that whole desk out and giving it that angle and then moving his individual cots, what Nikki said to me is just that has changed the feel of the space. We are so constrained in these buildings, we have so many more kids in these buildings trying to use common space, that, you know, for me, it's not that I didn't see them in there so they're not using it. I think that that's...
I didn't say that.
Yeah, well, that's... If you didn't say it, then it's what I heard, but I'll back off.
No,
the point is, the space, we're looking at it to try and create space that is really better utilized for the type of teaching, the type of educating that's going on today. And that's what I read in your plan.
That's right.
That's my understanding. That's what I'm operating from. If that's inaccurate, then correct.
No. It's in the context of what we've been doing today.
It's improving on all these pieces.
So we talked a lot about redesigning this building at this point, but I'd like to bring up another point. And that's that one of the things that I've learned a lot over the last 2 years, is that we get analysis paralysis in this district to the point that we haven't built a school in over 50 years, and we have five schools, that we put portables out in 2001 as a temporary solution, and now we're in 2015 finally fixing that problem. And the one thing that I admire from this superintendent and this administration over the last 2 years is looking at what we have today and how we can make improvements today. And because we did that, and because this board did that, we are now going to be at the spot where we will have removed all the portables of the elementary schools. With the plans we have in place now, we'll have done that. And we did that because even though every time we talk about it, there's 100 different options out there, we finally said, but it's our job to make a decision and move forward. So this is another one of those things to me that we could sit here, we can conceptualize this 400 more times. We could be here 10 years from now talking about should we move this kindergarten room, and we may be. Just because we have a task force doesn't mean anything's going to happen. We know that because of what we've done in this district before. This is something that is well within the budget. There's going to be immediate benefit. By next year, it's going to be the same issue that we had at Hadley. I was there when some of the kids walked in at Hadley the year afterwards, and they were looking like, whoa, what, you know, why didn't we have this school? Now I notice we're doing everything at Hadley. We use that space ourselves a lot. We use it for community things a lot. These spaces are important. We have the ability to make a decision. It's our job to make decisions, not to defer everything to everything that could happen in the next 25 years, because we don't know when it's going to happen. This fits within the budget. It's a good plan. I, too, have never heard anything for that space besides the library. It's time to make a decision. Let's vote, and either we'll do it or we won't. But this is where we get as a community, is that we just start refunneling all the ideas and thinking that my one idea is better than everybody else's. And I look back at the town hall that we had to talk about full-day kindergarten, and we put together groups of people in that room, and they were very passionate and very committed to doing that. And each one of the groups came up with their idea, which was different than the other groups, and they were adamant about it. There was nothing that was going to get them to change their mind. That's where it was going to be. And that's what we have to deal with. This could be a very long process. We can fix this library space right now. We should fix it. And so that's why I'm going to vote yes.
Okay.
Let's
vote. Debating whether I say that. That's fine, Dean. I mean, I certainly appreciate that something got done with the portables. I'm happy about it. I was glad to see it. To the fairness of other boards, there wasn't a lot of money sitting out there in reserves to do something with, and other boards probably weren't ready to go borrow money without going to taxpayers. So it's a little different environment, and I'm glad they're gone, so I appreciate what you're saying. Okay, anybody else? Roll call.
Oh, hold on.
Oh.
Can I get your thoughts? On the library?
On the library.
Sorry, I was trying to send it.
June 21 was given the charge of looking at our school in an innovative way. What is it that we can do to make the educational experience better for kids? That's where this conversation came from. It's not about Lincoln. It came from the teachers that were there looking at how to make the out of the city the heart of the school. It just so happened that Lincoln is the first school be able to because of our current library, Lincoln was the first school to be built. So it's not just me or our school. It really was the team that was charged with looking at spaces, looking at instructional spaces within the school. Over and over again, teachers were saying we need to look at making the library, the LMC, the heart of the school. What is it that What kind of space would kids gravitate to? What kind of spaces would really support the kind of learning we want our kids to be able to do in the 21st century? My LMC director had gone out then afterwards. We invited LMC directors to come to Team 21, and they came, and we broke up into small groups, and we discussed what it is that together we would like to see the space to be like for our kids. My LMC director went out and looked at other libraries that had gone through renovations. And because they're very different now, the children's departments and the libraries are very different, and how it's being used is different. They're not considered quiet spaces where kids go to read anymore. Mm-hmm. That's not what that library space will be like. It's a place where kids go to learn. And that learning happens oftentimes in small groups. That's why you're going to see lots of little learning spaces there. It's done in presentation style, where kids get up and they talk to each other, they speak, they present, they share ideas. There's a small production area where kids can make videos of themselves and present that to others within our school and within and parents and to boards and wherever. It's just giving the kid an opportunity to learn in the way that we really want them to learn, that whole 21st century thinking. I will say about the cubby space that's come up. We have, and if you've been in our building in the middle of the winter, we have cookbooks. We don't have lockers. We don't have the cubbies like the other schools do. Only two of our rooms we're using prior to going from specialization to prior specialization. Only two classrooms had to use the interior closets for cup or coats. And that's because our library extends across the hallway. It's an open space, but the hallway is actually a row of books.
Right.
And so those two classrooms, this last year, 2 years ago, we put books out into the hallway for those teachers. Prior to that, for those of the long-timers that live in school, if you remember where that triangular-shaped windows were, they were piled up with instructional materials. We had cardboard boxes up there. We had Rubbermaid containers up there because there is no storage space because those two classes and others were using them as cope rooms. And when what happened was they're both inside and outside the classrooms, so the teaching materials were not accessible to teachers. In order to get to a teaching material, they had to get on a chair or a ladder to climb up there to bring a box down to open it up, put another box back up there. So that was changed when we were able to move the code books out, which happened prior to going to specialization. When two classrooms, I said, we had to still continue to use that. But last year, 2 years ago, we moved those code books out. So, you know, the cubbies, of course, back to the cubbies, I will tell you, we have trouble in the wintertime because we have a code book set of kids, two or three coats, backpacks, and a very small container. You have boots that are melting water on the floor. It is unsightly, it is dangerous. And it's been something we need to get done one way or another. We need to have a cubby. The space is not just Lincoln School. It was the whole entire 21st century, Team 21, that was given the charge to look at how to reinvent that space for kids learning. And that was really what the focus of the conversation was. So
yeah, and I agree with you. There can be a lot done with the cubbies, not just in the area proposed here, mm-hmm. but throughout the whole building,
the whole
which
building,
is
right.
why I said a cubby strategy. But
okay. Thank you, Linda.
Anyone else want to comment?
The cubby's been on the strategy since
1994. Oh, that's why you're
white socks.
That's why you're white socks. Okay, well, thank you, everyone, for the discussion. Roll call.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante? Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
No.
Mr. Kenwood?
No. Okay. Where are we, guys?
Call a timeout here. I apologize. This was supposed to happen right after consent agenda, so we've had a group come in and they were going to present our new assistant principal, but I didn't have the script right in front of me, and we kept moving, and I had a lot of eye gestures back here to say, Paul, go back over here, but I misread those cues. So I'll start here with Lori, and Lori will hand it over to Steve and everybody else. Totally apologize.
Yeah,
I know.
I know. Bob is going to be our new assistant principal at Hadley in the fall of 2015, on July 1st. We had a field of candidates, over 100 applicants for this position. We paper screened, or actually not even paper anymore, online screened all of the candidates. We brought 17 in to meet with Steve and I at the first round. We brought 5 back for team interviews, and then Bob came back for a final interview and has emerged as our recommendation. He comes to us with 14 years of experience in Addison District 4, where he worked as a school psychologist. He started his first year at the elementary level and then spent the rest of his time at Indian Trail. Prior to that, he had some time in the insurance industry before deciding to go back to school and get his degree. He has endorsements, some very interesting endorsements beyond just school psychology, chief school business official, general administrative endorsements, director of special education. So he is our recommended candidate. We're thrilled to have him join us, and his approval was the employment, one of the employment recommendations that I first had appointed. So I want to thank Mr. Dagley and Ms. Amrine for being here this evening and support.
Well, thank you.
Welcome. Welcome. And you certainly may exit gracefully if you so choose. I did not. I totally apologize. You are more than happy. Welcome to exit. If you want. You're more than welcome to stay, too, if you want.
It's no
thank
problem.
You. Yeah. All right.
Okay. 2015 summer capital project replacement backtalk and overhead sound systems. May I have a motion to approve the replacement backtalk and overhead sound systems recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion?
This is straightforward. This is like you can't get replacement parts. It's one of those things that's kind of started to deteriorate. And
system dates back to 97 or so, so it's already 17, 18 years old, and it's time to replace it.
But you did make an enhancement since the last time you presented. You locked in the price.
That's correct.
So that's
correct.
Thank you.
So we've got a two-year agreement. We'll purchase half the system next year. They're going to hold the price, and we'll buy
the
balance next
month.
Great.
So
They're going to hold the same price. And carpet removal and replacement recommendation as presented.
Motion.
Second. Discussion. Roll call.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Alter?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes. FGM Architects Amendments 35, 38, and 39. May I have a motion to approve FGM Architects Amendments 35, 38, and 39 recommendation as presented.
Motion.
Second.
Discussion.
This is, I had asked Bob about this just as a point of interest, and that is throughout, both with FQC and also with FGM, there's been a lot of what I would call, sometimes in my work here I do this, but pro bono hours, right, so honoraria hours that you give. And I just want to highlight that while we're looking at the contract, but to also thank you for being willing to come in and serve as subject matter experts for the kids and give your time on that, because I know that comes out of, we don't charge for that. We don't charge for that when you do it. And I just want to have that on the record, that it's ramped up a lot this last year, especially with that problem-based learning, but it's made a huge difference for the students. So I want to thank you both for your time to do that.
Anyone else?
Also, I'd like to thank Ron for revising his one amendment. I forget which one it was, but taking a look at it and changing the scope a little bit, and obviously also changing the compensation part. So I appreciate you going back at it and doing that.
This was the one we talked about in finance that we wanted some clarification on, right?
That he changed that one on clarification with some verbiage changes, just to make it clear that what Jack was doing as a construction manager wasn't overlapping with what Ron was doing, which was more a construction administration role as an advisor, more or less, and that was reworded. But also, Bobby can tell me which one, since I only printed out one page. I think it was 35 was amended also later on. With which one was amended with the fee?
Okay. 35 was both the construction manager and the fee.
And the fee. Okay. So thank you.
Roll call.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Alter?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes. 2015-2016 Illinois Central School Bus Transportation Contract Renewal. May I have a motion to approve the 2015-2016 Illinois Central School Bus Transportation Contract Renewal Recommendation as presented.
Motion.
Second.
Discussion?
So this hasn't changed at all, right, Bob?
No.
For the year five, the cost is $682,000.
We'll know that number once we get the routes finally determined this summer.
Right.
But it's a 1.5% increase over last year.
Right. Okay. And that same true for our bus bundled bus partners 87-16.
This is the last year of that agreement.
Okay.
Roll call.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes. Furniture bid results and purchase approval. May I have a motion to approve furniture bid results and purchase approval recommendation as presented?
Move.
Second.
Discussion.
So we had two bids returned, but there were six that were put out.
That's kind of typical.
Typical, yeah.
Yeah.
No, you said that the last one other time when I asked about that. Yeah. And they can bid things separately, so you could use...
I can pick and choose which vendor I want.
Frank Cooney and McDonald for some other stuff, so we can kind of bundle the best cost. Yeah. Okay. Great. And then this will do it. This will finish all of the
elementary.
Updated.
We're done at the elementary schools.
Yeah, we're done at the elementary schools.
Same question in finance.
It was.
I'm channeling you, Patrick.
Is there a plan for a 21st century board table?
It's as good as it gets right here, baby.
At Hadley in the
roll call.
You've been to the Hadley LMC. It's 21st century.
Roll call.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes. FQC Construction Manager Contract Amendments. May I have a motion to approve FQC Construction Manager Contract Amendments recommended as presented?
Motion. Second.
Discussion. Roll call.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
No.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes. Okay, we move on to superintendent reports. I know you've been sitting up here patiently waiting to...
Very patiently. A couple things. We'll start with the audio streaming. I'm going to ask Erica to give us a quick report on where we're at with the audio streaming.
Sure. So the last two board meetings, or a couple board meetings, there was discussion about video and audio streaming and recording of board meetings. And there was some concern about costs related to the video. So then the conversation moved towards audio and improving audio and testing audio streaming. So we're planning on purchasing some mid-level microphones and a receiver and a couple some stands, and we won't exceed $1,000. That was kind of a discussion item at the last board meeting. So we're looking at new equipment for audio only, and we're hoping to improve the audio. We'll test audio streaming at the May 11th board meeting.
And to do that now, we'll have to have any public participation or presentations done
correct.
At a speaker at a podium, right?
Correct.
Or any,
because
microphone
it'll
at a podium.
Okay. That's the only change of board meeting format that will happen.
Okay.
Well, that's good because you can't always hear the public participation.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a good check.
Thank you for adding that. Yeah.
So we'll see that May 11th. Thank you, Erica and Mike, for taking care of all that. We'll have the new board seated next Monday evening. We will begin with the current board, finish any unfinished business, and then we will thank Mr. Kenwood for his
no
many
thanks
years.
Necessary. My pleasure.
Okay, his many service.
Take that literally.
I just keep moving. we will thank Mr. Kenwood for his services, and then we'll have the new board members. Or I apologize. Then we'll accept the vote count. The board will, and then we'll move into John administering the oath of office to the three board members, Mrs. Nelson, Mrs. Clark, and Mr. Buchholz. The new board will then be seated, and then the new board will begin officer elections from that point. You know, any board member who's looking to be an officer, please, you know, submit kind of a why you want that seat to me, and I'll make sure I get it out to other board members so they can see it as well. That will kind of wrap up the night. The new board president will then speak about committees. We'll discuss the committees starting on May 11th, though. The committee assignments won't be made until the 11th. The community task force that will be kicking off next Wednesday evening. So we'll be sending out some information on that.
How's interest going on that post?
I'll kick it over to Erica. Interest out there on it? Have we on the task force?
Oh, we don't know yet. But we're not doing an RSVP. We're just having everyone come. We're getting the word out in a few new ways. So I contacted the village, and they're going to be putting it in their e-news. We missed the long lead time for the marquee, so I was hoping to get it on the marquee downtown, but that's not going to happen this time. But we are sending out postcards to every household within our boundaries. Just,
great.
You know, small postcards.
Very good.
For sure. And on that postcard, it indicates that we do not need to have a child in our school district to attend this meeting. We want to hear all voices. So we're hoping that will generate more interest as well. So I think it'll be an indicator of how many people come to the information session. That's not where the task force kicks off. It's just truly to start the conversation about logistics for the task force and gauge interest.
Erica, could we use, I know Fort Penn has a new sign, and Franklin has a sign where they, you know, they have letters that you can put up. You know, if we at least use those that are accessible like that, and, you know, we can, I know that Churchill has the sign identity kind of signs that they print up. I don't know how cost effective it would be, but, you know, just to be able to use that, especially on Geneva, that is such a well-traveled path, that if we could use their frame and just get a sign up there.
Yeah, I'll look into that.
I know we're a week or so out, but you know, it'd be worth it.
That's it for me. Back to you.
Thank you. Board reports, sir. Are there any board members that would like to report out?
I sat in for Drew, right, at Porcelain. He was unable to make it. So I was only able to go for the first hour of it because I had another appointment. But it was on the 14th of April at 7 o'clock over at Forest Glen. Co-presidents Becky Allen and Bridget Kristen Young. The first 30 minutes of it, or not quite 30, but were representative problem-based learning presentations. So they did like a snippet of two of them. What was also, I think, really helpful, and the parents who were there, who were parents of the children, but then also just some interested parties, parents who came, is that Christina Callum, one of our problem-based learning coaches, did a presentation on problem-based learning. I think it, this is the first year of problem-based learning as an instructional method tool, and then, you know, with our coaches, and I think, like, with any new thing, the more you do it, the better you get at it. I've noticed with the PBL that I've sat on, you know, a little tighter process, you know, folks coming in and what they're doing. But she did a really nice presentation that I'm sure the other problem-based learning coaches used. And one of the screens that I really liked was she had this network of experts listed, where within those PBLs she listed the folks that were being brought in. So it might be, you know, Ron or Dave or whomever is seated in there. So I just think she did a really nice job with that. And one quick takeaway was that the presentation was done, I think, through Skype for some experts who were also listening in. And the children in one of these PBLs had identified a new technology, I guess I'll call it, and these experts that had been working on this issue had not heard of it. And actually, during the PBL, Christina said, could you send us that information to these second graders? So I just, you know, I think that that's just a great indication of the depth of research and learning that some of the children are doing, so that was kind of neat. And then I requested minutes from Forest Glen. I know it's a little bit, again, for the run, but I'll submit those Nancy with anything for the board report once I get them there as well. The other thing is today I was at a LEND executive committee meeting, And on May 4th, Governor Rauner is coming to DuPage County to the Lend meeting. And so we were working on a plan to help give him a snapshot. We did 20 minutes, and then he's staying for another 20 to do some Q&A, kind of like his tour duty he's been doing around the state a little bit. And so we were talking about the importance of having him understand the environment of DuPage County and how critical it is not to assume or presume based on some of the demographics that are typically seen, is that there's a real there's another view of the world here in terms of mobility, levels of poverty, things like that. So the other two, the three superintendents serve on the committee with me and two other board members, and so with Peg Agnos, our executive director, we've come up with a strategy to at least provide for him some understanding of our property taxes, and then a sample of an elementary district, a high school district, and then a unit district, and how some of his turnaround plan will impact depending on what ultimately goes through, property tax freeze, things like that. So we're grateful that he's carved out some time, and it should be interesting. It's at the Lend office. So.
Do you think he's going to touch on SB1 at all? Or?
No, that's not that in particular, but discussion around the state of education funding. In the Tribune this past week, there was an interview with the new Chris Cook, who was the regional office of education president. He's stepping down, and Governor Rauner has put in a new individual. And so there was an interview with him, and it's hard because it's snippets of responses. But he said in this, I'm not verbatim, but he said in this that any funding is going to take a long time, many years, is what he said in his response. So that's obviously still going to be part of the discussion, but it's not anything that's going to happen by May 31st, which is what they were talking about. So anyway, he's coming in to be able to report back on that. The other thing I wanted to bring back to the table was we did a huge kind of hue and cry around the five essentials survey, and so I had asked Dr. Gordon if I could check with Erica and talk to her around kind of what our responses were, so I appreciate that. And I did go on the website, because on the website you see our 2014 results, which were no results. It was such a low response that it didn't give any feedback. There was no data to it. But what was interesting, if you go on, is that there is, and I just wanted to show you what this looks like, an executive summary that they provide for each of the schools. Even though we had low response, so it didn't give us any criterion with which to get response, this was last year, they still do have, a summary report. So these are all 2014. But this year we had responses, and thank you, Erica, for this. Staff responses, we needed 50% of each school. All of the elementary schools met the staff responses of 50%, which is great. Hadley did not meet the 50% mark, unfortunately, for staff responses. So that means we're going to get that feedback normed against, the other reports. And again, this report is the Urban Education Institute of the University of Chicago, a really well-vetted, a reliable tool. And the five essential areas that are surveyed are effective leaders, collaborative teachers, involved families, supportive environment, and ambitious instruction. So those were staff. Parent responses, we needed 20% at each school. We had three of the four elementaries meet that. Churchill, Franklin, Forest Glen met that. Lincoln did not meet that. And then Hadley did meet the parent response rates at 20%. And then the junior high only, Hadley met the response rate for students. So we have that information as well. So, in a time where we've been talking about, again, every other year surveying to keep some continuity around our surveys of the community, if we can pump this up next year and get 100%, this is just a great tool. I would really encourage, us to go back on and take a look at it because it's great information that we can get back. So when do we get the, when that comes back?
Probably
later
until maybe August.
August, yeah. Closer to the beginning of the school. Yeah, but the website is really easy to navigate, and it's great information, so I'd encourage people to take a look at that, especially because we talk a lot about surveying, and this is a very reliable, validated tool from the U of C. It's good stuff. So, that's
it. Anything else? Oh. Anyone else?
I don't have an official board report, but something
about unofficial.
I was able to go to the LinkedIn School Talent Show that the PTA put on. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic. There were over 30 talents group, so I didn't count the students up, but it was probably over 100 or near 100. There was kindergartners playing piano. They were outstanding. There was a fifth grader that was just knocked your socks off. She was fantastic. There was lots of dance routines.
Would happen to be your daughter?
No, it wasn't. I don't have a fifth grade daughter. But she was fantastic. But there's a magician that I have to tell you about, though, too. The magician is back again. He was there last year, and I was glad he was back. And he was doing this show. He's not a magician. He's a stand-up comedian that should be, you know, down at Second City next year. Right? When, I mean, the kids went past it. But all the kids did a great job, and it was fun. Fun event for Lincoln.
Very cool.
Anyone else?
Quickly, yeah. For PTA Council, I went to, or PTA, I went to Ben Franklin's a couple weeks ago. Just highlights Katie Prescott's new president, and I was amazed at the money that they're raising at the Ben Franklin my school. $4,000 was raised for the tiles project that they have there. Fifth graders raised $2,500 on one of their projects that went directly to St. Jude's Cancer Research. A lot. They had a lot of conversations, but those are two big things that I pulled out the PTA. I didn't realize I should have, but how much money that they raised, and they basically washed it through the charitable organizations, which I think is a great testament to that part of the community. So thank you.
Thank you for that report. Anyone else? Any financing you want to share, or no meeting?
We didn't have
any. Say no meeting for me. All right, terrific. Upcoming meetings, May 4th, 2015, special board reorganization meeting at 7 p.m. Central Services Office. 7 p.m., huh? Okay. May 11th, 2015, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m. Central Services Office. May 26th, 2015, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m. Central Services Office. Other matters, are there any other matters to be considered by the board at this time? All right, I am sad to announce.
Sorry. John, it's your last full regular meeting.
Oh.
Yeah. So, as is custom, there's a gift bag.
Oh, I thought that was the next meeting, because I have gifts for you guys.
Oh, yeah.
How convenient.
Yeah.
So, I'll just let you pull things out, and then I'll explain them if they need to be explained. So, John, thank you.
Nuts. Almonds.
No meaning in the nuts.
Almonds. Thank you. Thank you. More
nuts. Well, you know, John, you become a huge snacker during closed session. You never use the snack as much, but you're like, where's the basket?
All right.
Have to have it for your new board.
Starbucks refreshers.
Nope.
Strawberry lemon. Is this coffee?
Nope, but there is coffee in there.
Oh, okay. Thank you. This is very exciting, folks. Rubik's Cube.
Just in case you get bored at the village meeting at the board table.
Fortunately, it's in plastic, so.
So try not to unwrap it. It's a mess to put it back together.
It'll look good. It's like
you're drilling.
More than that.
Where's the alcohol, guys?
More Starbucks.
What's a
Frappuccino.
Frappuccino? What is that?
That's a cool coffee.
Yeah, well, there's a good breakfast.
That's your coffee.
I don't drink coffee, so I don't know what this is. I'm also an immigrant, so you know, I don't always know everything.
So that's a little notepad, John. You can read that.
What I miss about the District 41 board. Hearing my own voice. Being the funniest guy in the room. Best looking board member. Oh, thanks, guys. Most articulate.
Can I fill that out?
It doesn't say any of that. It says my name on it.
Thank you. Thank
you. You're welcome. Couple of learner characteristic bracelets.
Thank you critically. All right.
All that hard work you did on that.
Well, we want to spread the word, too.
That's a right. Pen. Now I'm gonna have a pen. I needed this 10 years ago.
You're all ready
one
for filling.
In there. The little paper.
Wait.
Oh.
More coffee.
Starbucks.
Your favorite drink.
Yes. and a District 41 vision.
Paperweight.
There you go. All right. Actually, this is a 21st century. It's got to be electronic weight. Well, thank you, guys. It's appreciate it. I guess I'll have a few words to say at the next meeting, I guess.
Good.
If I can plan that. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. All right. Are there any other matters to be considered by the board besides the one we just did? No? All right. Unfortunately, the board does not have a need to adjourn to closed session this evening, so may I have a motion to adjourn the meeting, the April 27, 2015 board meeting.
Motion. Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Nay. Okay.